Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. And welcome to Right Through the Roof. And today I'm speaking with Peter McLean. Hi, Peter. How are you going?
Hi, good morning, Madeline. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. A little introduction about Peter. So Peter is a writer and retired martial artist from Norwich. His urban fantasy trilogy, Burned Man, is available through Angry Robot Books. And his new novel, Priest of Bones, the first in a grimdark fantasy series, is out in October 2018. Thanks for sparing the time to have a chat with me this morning. Well, your morning anyway, Pete.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Madeline. Right and early on a Sunday morning here.
Good, with the rain beating against the window.
Absolutely.
Lovely. Nice and atmospheric. So how I like to start off is a few kind of warm-up questions. So seeing you've been stuck inside, maybe you need to do some kind of jogging on the spot, some, you know, toe touches, get yourself warmed up. So do you write every day?
No, absolutely not. I'm one of the most undisciplined writers you'll ever meet. I work a day job, so I have to fit writing in around that, as most people do, I know. My schedule is very much as and when I'm in the mood, which is the complete opposite of all the writing advice you'll get usually given, but most of what I'm going to say probably is. I go in great binges, so I'll do nothing for days, and then come Friday night, I'll still be there at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'll have blasted out 8,000 words or something ridiculous.
Wow. But that must work for you.
It does, yeah. I mean, I get a first draft of a 100K novel in 4 months normally. So it does work, but it's not at all a structured approach. I'll be the first to admit that.
So if you do it in those big bursts like that, are you a plotter or a pantser?
A bit of both. I'm mostly a plotter, especially, I mean, I'm currently writing the third book in War for the Rose Throne. So by the time you're on book three of a drama that's got a lot of politics and intrigue in it, you can't be pantsing it. You absolutely just can't. So I'll plot at a fairly high level, though, so I've got my major milestone events, but I do tend to pants how I get from one to the other. So I have set the expectation with my long-suffering editor that everything I write grows arms and legs while I'm writing it, and there will be things that weren't in the synopsis because I didn't know they were going to happen, but they did, so here we are, you know. But I've always got the end established before I start, I think is the main thing, so I know where I'm going. I just don't necessarily know what route I'm taking to get there.
Mm-mm. Well, that just lets the magic happen, doesn't it?
Absolutely, I think so.
Cool. Okay, so what is your writing fuel of choice if you're there at 4 a.m. on a Friday or Saturday morning?
Well, it's probably whiskey by that time of the night. It's usually strong black coffee. You know, if it's not trying to eat through the cup, it's not strong enough. I listened to the interview you did with Gail Carriger.
Ah.
I think I am to coffee what Gail is to tea, put it that way.
So you have a very specific coffee blend that you need to get ordered in?
No, I'm not quite that picky, admittedly. It's more about the strength than the blend. I couldn't tell you what sort of beans are in it, I must admit.
Well, as long as it's, you know, as black as a moonless night or whatever the quote is from Twin Peaks.
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. So it sounds like we've got to know you a little bit more. So how do you describe your writing and what themes do you like to explore?
I would describe my writing, I'm a thriller writer, I think, at heart. I write in the fantasy genre, but structurally and pacing-wise, I'm writing thrillers. There's a lot of overlap between fantasy and crime fiction, and certainly in the new series, historical fiction. So Priest of Bones is set in a secondary world, but it's a secondary world that looks an awful lot like Tudor England and Scotland. So I'm quite picky with things like world building and technological accuracies. So, yeah, there's a historical feel to it, but pacing-wise, they're definitely thrillers at heart. They are. All my books have been about gangsters so far, both series. Something I seem to keep coming back to. The main themes in Priest of Bones is the aftermath of war. So although the series is called War for the Rose Throne, that's something that will come out later in the series as to what that actually means. It's not really covered in the first book. But the characters have just returned from war. And there's a kind of... I don't know if you've ever seen a show called Peaky Blinders.
Yep.
I don't know if you get that. Yeah. Well, the very first series of that, they've just come home from World War One. And it's a very similar kind of setup to the beginning of Priest of Bones. The war's over. They've won, but only just. And a lot of what I explore is the traumatic aftermath of war and what it does to soldiers and how it affects everybody's lives forevermore, really.
Hmm. So do you have to do quite a bit of research?
Yes. Especially with that. I'm not a military man myself, so I've had it read by a number of serving and retired military people for feedback. I mean, I've had active duty soldiers read it, and a gentleman who's actually a retired army colonel. So a lot of work going into that. I think if you're going to explore that sort of theme, you've got an obligation to get it right. It's not something you can just make up, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people talk a lot at the moment about sensitivity readers. You know, that's a completely different style of sensitivity reader from someone who's been through it.
It's the same thing at heart. I mean, I hate that term, I must admit. I really do. But I know what you mean, and it is exactly the same thing, yeah. Anything like that, I just think it's research.
Yeah. It's just making sure you're portraying the people that you want to portray in the right way.
Exactly that, yeah, exactly. I mean, I wouldn't write about Indonesia without either going there or talking at length to somebody who has, because I don't know anything about the place. So it's the same kind of thing. If you're writing about something you know nothing about, which obviously fantasy authors do a great deal, then you have to do the background legwork, I think.
It's quite interesting about you calling yourself a thriller writer, but... In your secondary world, in a secondary world building way.
Yeah, I think thrillers have a different structure to other genres, really, as a lot of focus goes on pacing, and you can have sort of shorter chapters and hooks at the end of a chapter to make you keep turning the pages, and that's something I've tried to put into a fantasy setting, really.
Hmm. And one other thing I just wanted to ask before we move on to anything further is the term grimdark. How do you define it?
Oh, I don't think anybody really knows what grimdark means. It's become one of these marketing terms that started out as a joke and now we can't get rid of it. I think that there are probably as many definitions of what grimdark is as there are fantasy authors that write dark fantasy. I'm not a big fan of it as an expression, I must admit. To me, grimdark implies... Well, I don't know if you know where it came from. It originated in Warhammer 40,000, the Games Workshop tabletop gaming, which I also write some tie-in fiction for them as well. But their hook line is, in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. And there is. I mean, it is a war game. That's the purpose of the setting. And there is no hope for anybody. Your choices are between terrible and worse. It's a fantastic setting. It's glorious over the top and great fun to write. But there is no light at the end of the tunnel. Everything is just progressively getting worse and worse with each new iteration. And that was originally what Grimdark was. And I think writing or reading a fantasy novel on that premise would be incredibly depressing. not really a lot of fun for anybody. So I don't think it really has the same meaning. And in fantasy, grimdark tends to mean you've got morally ambiguous characters, you've got anti-heroes, difficult choices. But I think for me, the main thing is consequences. So if you look at your classical high fantasy like Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time. You've got magic everywhere. You've got instant healing spells and things like Dungeons and Dragons. You get healing potions and you have your leg cut off and you're back up and running 5 minutes later because you've drunk a potion kind of thing. Grimdark doesn't work like that. You know, if you have your leg even badly wounded, it's going to go bad. You're going to get gangrene. It's going to have to be amputated. It's that kind of thing. You don't fight a horrific war for 5 years and then come home and farm unicorns in the sunshine. You're a quivering wreck of PTSD for the rest of your life. And I think for me, that's what it means. But like I say, you're going to get different answers to that from virtually everybody, I think. It is a term that we'd like to just go away, but I think we're stuck with it now.
Well, it seems to encapsulate, yeah, something that sounds pretty enticing, though. We're like, you know, we're like a bit of grimness. You know, it's not all going to be unicorns.
I mean, the world is a grim place, and I always hesitate to talk about realism or fantasy being realistic because it's fantasy and it's full of magic, which, you know, rather contradicts the statement. But I think in terms of the way society works in a novel, you know, the way the world works, it's more in line with our reality, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. So, let's talk a little bit about writing and then the key question I like to ask. So, what do you think the one thing is that's been most important in improving your writing?
Reading and writing, honestly. I think if you're going to write, you have to read. You read extensively and constantly and outside your own genre. It's amazing what you can learn from reading things you'd probably never pick up and you're reading for pleasure. And the other thing is just writing. If you're going to write, if you're going to become a writer, you have to write. You don't become a writer by reading books about writing. You become a writer by writing. And I'm on a forum called Absolute Write, which is fantastic resource for writers. It really, really is. But there's some of the people on there, I think you're on here so much. When do you write? You can talk about writing till the cows come home, but talking about writing isn't writing. You know, there's a drum I keep banging. You have to do it. It's like flying hours. If you want to be a pilot, you've got to put your hours in to get your pilot's license. It's exactly the same thing. Only you don't actually get issued with a license at the end of it, so you never know whether you're any good or not. But it's doing it. It's the act of doing it informs the act, if that makes sense. So it's just years and years and years of practice. I don't think there's any shortcuts. I really don't.
So have you always written, or have you gone through phases where you haven't written and you've forced yourself?
I've only been writing seriously for probably about 8 years, I think. But I've always written things ever since I was a teenager. Mercifully, none of them survive. I really do dread to think. But there we are. You know, I didn't finish my first ever completed novel till 2009, I think. And that's an unpublished mess that's sitting in a dusty corner of my hard drive, like most people's first ever novels are. The first novel I had published was the fourth one I completed, which was Drake and the first of the Burn Man series. So I had written an entire trilogy of utter crap. We'll never see the light of day, but it doesn't matter. That was how I learned to do it, was by doing it. I think my friend Ed McDonald, who writes Blackwing, the Raven's Mark series, which is tremendous, I think he said he'd written 1 million words before he had one published. And it's just, oh God, you know. It's the dedication, it's putting the hours in. I'm repeating myself, and I'll keep banging this drum, but I think it's an important message to land. It really is.
And it's one of those things that no one really wants to hear, but everyone
is. A lot of honest writing advice is things people don't want to hear. It's difficult to have the conversation with a starry-eyed, new, I decided I want to be a novelist. I've written 3,000 words, how do I get an agent? You just think, no. Doesn't work like that, pal. Only it did.
But, only 999,000 words to go.
That's the one, yeah. You tell somebody that, they're just going to hate you, aren't they? You know what I mean? But unfortunately, it is true. It really is. Uncomfortable writing advice is usually the accurate stuff.
Yeah, it's not sexy to sit in front of a computer for, till 4 a.m. banging away without knowing if it's ever going to go anywhere.
No, it isn't. But I think it's what you have to do, to be perfectly honest.
Well, what else are you going to do with your time?
Exactly. Who needs sleep, so otherwise?
Now, just before, you were talking about reading outside of your genre and reading things you wouldn't ordinarily read. Is there anything that you've read recently that fits into that?
Yes. A friend of mine, a lady called Sarah Pimbra, has recently... I knew her because she was a fantasy author, but over the last couple of years, she's transitioned into, I suppose you'd call them, mainstream thrillers. And she had a book called Cross Her Heart out this year, which is absolutely phenomenal. It is a crime thriller, but it's very much a broad appeal rather than crime genre. I'm not quite sure what the technical term is for it, sort of mass market. It's the kind of book you buy in supermarkets and airports and things. And not the sort of thing I'd normally pick up, but obviously I'm friends with Sarah. I thought, well, let's see what it's like. And it is really, really good. It's very twisty, turny, grip lit, I think they call it. And hidden surprises and an ending you won't see coming. I was talking earlier about thriller pacing. It's a fantastic example of how to do that very, very well. It's the sort of book people will say, I couldn't put it down, and they'll actually mean it, you know?
Good.
So I think that sort of thing. I read a lot of non-fiction as well. I like old, weird academic books about niche historical subjects. And I tell myself it's research, but I know I probably won't use it. But I just enjoy reading that kind of thing. If it's written down, I'll read it. If I've got nothing to do, I'll pick something up and just whatever it is and read it.
Now I'm curious. What is your obscure niche historical thing you're reading?
Oh, I've got stacks of the things. There's a fantastic secondhand bookshop on the coast near where we live. He just has books on the weirdest things. I'm trying to think. The strangest one I think I've got is Crab Cakes and Courtesans, which is that's what it's called. It is an examination of Republican Athenian social history. It's really, really interesting. I mean, it sounds absolutely nuts, but it's actually really interesting. It's just obscure facts of day-to-day lives of ancient Greeks you've never heard of. I know I won't use any of it because I write in the Tudor period, but I don't care. It's interesting.
It's that title is almost like some kind of romance novel.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah. No, it's a really quite dry history, but there we are. I guess if you're writing a dry history, you have to come up with a catchy title to get anybody to buy it.
Yeah, true. So are you trying anything new at the moment in terms of your writing process?
Not as such at the moment, because, as I say, I'm actually writing book 3 in the series at the minute. So it's pretty established. I've got, the world is set up. I know the character voice is very, very well established. It's first person anyway, so I'm completely in the head of the character. So it's a case of sticking to what I know works with this one. Like everybody, I've always got one eye on the future. I've started sketching out something completely unrelated, which will be a future project. That is actually quite different, because everything I've had published so far has been in first person. And the new thing I'm looking at is I'm going with limited third, with 3 points of view characters, which is very different for me. It's not something I've explored in a lot of detail before. So we'll see how it goes. It's quite fun so far. Well, there's only 10,000-15,000 words of that in the can so far, I think, because deadlines and so on and so forth. But it will see the light of day at some point, I'm sure.
Good. So you just spoke about Sarah Pimbra and your odd historical academic texts you like. So what other writers inspire you?
Oh, there's been some great stuff recently. Two of my favourite recent new writers are a chap called Ed MacDonald, who I mentioned, he of the million words, with his Craven's Mark series, which is absolutely marvellous. It's a kind of post-apocalyptic fantasy world with spies and murderers and the secret police that the central character works for, and flesh-eating monsters in the apocalyptic wasteland. It's tremendous stuff. They're very much of the thriller mold as well. Really do enjoy them. And the other thing that I keep raving about is a new series from Anna Smith Spark. It's called The Empires of Dust. It's the trilogy. It's, the first book is called A Broken Knives. And it's completely different. It's still fantasy, but it reads like ancient mythology.
Mm.
She's got such a strong narrative voice. It kind of, it's the sort of thing you really have to read out loud, I think.
Mm.
It's done like something like Homer, like an oral tradition of storytelling around the campfire. Her rhythms are just like poetry. It's absolutely wonderful. Not the sort of thing I'd probably ever write, but I really do enjoy reading them.
Mm.
Tremendous stuff. And they're both British writers. They were both debuts in 2017, so... Mm. We know each other. We see each other at local conventions and things. But I mean, I think in terms of more established people, I'm a big, big fan of Joe Abercrombie.
Mm.
It's absolutely tremendous. I learned so much about writing character voice just from reading Joe's stuff. It is a masterclass in character voice. It really, really is. Other than that, like everybody else, I'm waiting for George Martin to finish the next... Not waiting quite as hard as I was, I must admit, but we'll get it one day, I'm sure.
Hmm.
But I think my original writing influences were Stephen King, very much so, when I was a teenager, and Tanith Lee, who I absolutely adore. It's one of my great regrets as an author is that I never got to meet Tanith Lee before she passed away.
Hmm.
Love her stuff. I mean, again, it's not the kind of voice that I write in, but boy, could she write. Tremendous. Absolutely tremendous.
Good. Okay, so let's talk about Priest of Bones. So what inspired that, and were you trying anything different?
I was. So I'd had the three urban fantasies published, which are thinly disguised crime novels with some magic in. And I think I am a frustrated crime writer at heart. I must be. I've no other explanation for it. I got those published almost by accident, really, because I don't read urban fantasy. I think my exposure to urban fantasy was watching Supernatural on TV and reading the Hellblazer comics. And so somehow I wrote three urban fantasy novels that got published, but I don't honestly read the stuff. I've always liked what I call swords and horses, you know, secondary world fantasy. Mm. And I thought, well, you know, this is what I read. This is what I should be writing. And I was like, yeah, but I like gangsters. I like gangsters. And I read, it was another Joe Abercrombie book, and I can't for the life of me remember which one it is. I think it's Best Served Cold. And there's a small scene where a secondary character is on the trail of the heroine. And he goes to what's effectively an opium den in this town. And it's run by a fantasy gangster. I can't remember what the character's name was now, but, you know, he's got his henchmen round him and they're smoking dope and playing cards and all this kind of thing. And I just thought, I want to write about that guy. You know, that is the guy. And I sort of doodled around with it for a bit and I thought, oh, this just doesn't work. I can't. There isn't a story here. You know, it's a cool idea, it's a cool setting, but I just don't have a story. And that went on the back burner for a while. And then Peaky Blinders came on TV.
Mm.
With the characters returning from the war, and he's got his mad brother and their friends around him, and it just all fell into place in my head, and I thought, that's what it is. It's that mixed with that in Swords and Horses Land. And I think I had 10,000, 15,000 words of it a week later. I thought, yeah, this has got legs. This is what we're looking for. So it's a completely different storyline to Peaky Blinders, but that was just the kick in the back of that brain that I needed, I think, to drop it into place. And that was the book that got me my agent, because the first three books I sold direct to a publisher. Pro tip, kids, don't do that. But Peaky Blinders got me my agent, the lovely Jenny Golliboy, who's now at Donald Miles Literary Agency. So despite being in the UK, my agent and my primary publisher are both in New York, which is interesting with time zones and whatnot. But no, it works well. So I've completely forgotten what the question was now. I was rambling again.
No, you answered it perfectly. It was it was what inspired it, and were you trying something different?
Oh, yeah, sorry. No, it was. I remember. It was minutes ago, Madeline. Sorry.
You answered it perfectly. Excellent. Well, I might start to wrap up now. So if people are interested in finding out more about your books and finding out more about your work, where's the best place to find you online?
I've got a website at talonroth.com. The most up-to-date place is probably Goodreads. Goodreads is magic. I don't know how it works, really. Every time I produce something, it appears on my Goodreads page, like elves did it. I've no idea how it works, but... So that's got all my Black Library tie-in stuff on there as well, linked to my Goodreads profile. And that's where you can come and leave a review, please. And I'm on Twitter, obviously. I'm at PeteMC666. I have got an author page on Facebook, but Facebook is so hopeless if you don't pay the money that I don't send people to that. If anybody actually wants me, Twitter's the best place to get me, definitely.
So is there a story behind the Talon Wraith name of your
book? Yes, there kind of is. It was named after a kind of demon I made up for the Drake books. And I just liked it. And every variation of PeterMcLean.com was taken. And I thought, what on earth else can I call it that's me? Because there's no good naming your website after a particular book, because, of course, you're going to write other books and people forget the old ones. I just thought, this is something I made up. I like the way it sounds. Nobody else has used it, and it doesn't really mean anything, so it'll do as a brand name. No, it just kind of stuck, really.
No, it's a cool word. I like it.
Yeah, so I'm quite fond of it, I must admit. I like making up demons.
Well, that's part of the most fun about fantasy and any of your kind of speculative fiction, isn't it? Just making stuff up.
Absolutely, yeah. You can really go to town with some of this stuff.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Pete, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thanks, Madeline. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedeist.com or madeline_deist on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedeist.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?